Let me turn now to the great moment in human history when primitive food collecting was given up and great societies based on agriculture and animal husbandry developed, largely in the Near East, somewhere around the 7th and 6th millenniums BC. In these well-fed societies, growing their own food and so forth, large social units developed. And within these, there grew special castes or special professions. And one of these professions was the priest profession, whose function it was to observe the heavens so that we would know what the proper time for planting was, what the proper time for reaping, and so forth. Now, in the course of these observations, the movement of the planets among the stars was noted and recorded. And it was found that there was a mathematical order. This begins to be recognized, and we can see it in the clay tablets as early as about 3000 BC. The notion that there is a cosmic law manifesting itself in a mathematical order develops at this time. And the next notion is that society should imitate that order. And so you have developed in this period, 3000 BC in Mesopotamia, the notion of society as an imitation of the heavenly order. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And then everybody in that society moves according to cosmic laws. The laws of the cosmos, the laws of society are one. All of our religions carry this in the religious calendar. We go through the cycle of the death and resurrection of the sun, you might say, in our calendric feasts, which are interpreted in terms of our various mythologies. Here we have the idea of society and nature working together to manifest the laws of the cosmos. It is also thought that the individual serves his own best purpose by participating in these laws because they are the laws of his own being. Now, one of the great societies in which this principle is manifest is the Egyptian. Here was what one could call a hieratic society where everybody was, in some sense, divine. And the highest divinity on earth was the pharaoh. The pharaoh is the incarnation of the most important aspect of the divine principle. But we are all, in such a society, incarnations. To a very recent date, this point of view existed in Japan. The emperor of Japan was regarded as a divine being. But everything in Japan was divine. The tatami, the mat on the floor. I've heard that seamstresses hold requiem services for broken needles. That the pots and pans in the kitchen are to be respected as serving one. Divine powers in the service of man. It's a lovely idea. And the emperor is simply first among the gods who are manifest here. In such a place, the land itself is heaven. Egypt was, as it were, heaven. No one wanted to go anywhere else. The gods came into the world as people, and there they were. And by obeying these laws, one identified oneself with this divine principle. Now, it was about 1700 or so B.C., that this notion of the divinity of the world began to crack up. The second millennium BC was a millennium of horror. Wild tribesmen from the desert and from the northern plains were breaking in on these wonderful little divine cities. And people who had served their divinities with all care and all propriety found themselves destitute. There's a very interesting poem from about 1750 from Babylon, which is called the Babylonian Job. A king has fallen terribly ill. Terribly ill. And he has nevertheless served his God. And he complains. He says, "Oh my God, I have served you, and here I am destitute." What kind of repayment is this for my virtue? It's exactly the problem of Job in the Bible. The answer that's given is about the same as in Job. Don't complain. Have faith in your God, and the reward will come in due time and in proper way. That is to say, there's the notion that there will be a reward. And in fact, the king ultimately is healed. But the problem comes up of gods who do not serve those who serve them. Now, it is about this time that we begin to have, in the realm that I'm speaking about, of the pagan religions, a notion that the divinity does not inhabit the world. This I'm going to call mythic dissociation. Man is not divine. He serves the gods. There is a rather harrowing myth. The gods of ancient Sumer lived as men do. They plowed their fields and reaped, but they were lazy. And so there was a famine. And one deity, Ea by name, the Lord of the Abyss, had this wonderful idea. "I'm going to make a race of slaves, and their function will be to serve the gods." And so he creates men. Now, this notion of men is totally different from the notion of the old Egyptians. No longer are men divine. No longer can men find divinity in themselves. Men are slaves of the gods, and they must serve the gods. And if they do not serve the gods, they are guilty.